All right. Test 1, 2, test.
Good morning. Test 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Hey, looks good. We're in the studio and we're on Periscope and it's working and we're not upside down.
All right.
Well, hey, let's we'll get going here. Get the computer going. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us in the studio here. Another Flight Test After Hours podcast. Saturday morning again. And if you're joining us here on Periscope this morning, as you can see, I'm all by myself here in the studio. Everybody's been crazy busy. As you guys probably know, Wayne just got a beautiful new house with lots of land. So he's out there getting that thing shaped up and ready to go. So he's busy. Mike, I don't know what we're going to do with Mike. He's out in a tree stand, I'm sure, this morning.
I told him to Skype with us.
You know, and I thought about that, and I'm sure he probably doesn't carry his phone with him, but I thought, you know what, we ought to just call him anyway. I could just see that big deer coming ready to go, and bing, his phone starts ringing, and it's me, you know. Mike, where you at, buddy? Hey, the podcast is going on.
I'm internationally. You can't say anything bad.
Yeah. So if anybody, you know, give Mike some crap. Tell him to get out of that tree stand and get in here. It's not going to hurt him, you know, once every couple weeks and sit down and chat and, you know, like to hear him laugh at the crash stories. So give him some crap a little bit. You know, tell him to get in here. So what else? I got a bunch of notes here. We're going to go through some news, there's a few new products out, maybe mm-hmm. we'll get into some crash stories, or we'll take some questions off of Periscope. I'll try to read some, or if Andre, you get some, note them down or whatever. Hey, first thing, I didn't even know this, you told me yesterday, this is your 1 year anniversary of being on the FT After Hours podcast.
Yeah, last year we were talking about the Sky Mule and my thoughts and impressions of the Sukhoi 29. So it's been a wild year for us.
Huh. Now, I was trying to think, my memory's horrible, but I was trying to think, obviously the first time I met you was really, it was at Flight Fest 2014. That's where, you know, we really got to talking and became pretty good friends. But before that, how did it actually, I know we were chatting back and forth a little bit, but I can't even remember how it actually started, though. Do you?
I think I was listening to your podcast and just getting into, you know, Flight Fest and Flight Test and everything. And I think we just started interacting from there. And it was a lot of Twitter chatter. And uh-huh. I was asking you a lot of questions early on because, you know, I was just at a point where I was starting to really, you know, the hobby for me was going from just a, you know, low cost thing to really becoming my main focus, especially after the racing thing. And I guess, yeah, from there, our friendship just grew. And now all of a sudden, you know, we're pulled into a podcast every 2 weeks on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. And it's crazy to see where you've come from too. Cause I know when we first started talking and everything, you were almost strictly just a scratch builder only.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
now look at where, you know, you're at.
Yeah. Purchasing planes that are way too expensive to even contemplate flying at this point.
Right. It's just funny how, you know, things progress. And I've been through the whole thing and have seen 4 or 5 different people go through the whole process. So it's just funny. It's almost the same thing for everybody, what they go through. Scratch building, then they might purchase their first plane, and then they go through the Warbirds, and then they go through the big planes, and then they go through the fast planes, and then the 3D. It's just this process. It's just kind of funny.
Yeah, and that's it. And it feels like I'm on like hyper mode just to get through and get a taste of everything and just figure out what I like. And so it's been a wild ride, and it's I'm at the point where I'm like, okay, I'm running out of space here. I need to put the brakes on and with the currency exchange stuff and everything too. That's really put a heat on it or hurt on it, I should say, especially for next year. My considerations will be a lot different. That said, I'm having fun with the little gizmos and my big thing is I'm borderline worried I got into that rut that you were describing last time where mm-hmm. I have been able to get out.
Right.
I've been really happy I can fly in the backyard, but now sunset's at like 6:30, yeah. So I'm like, oh.
Yeah,
I know. I'm like, and even this morning I woke up, and I'm going to get out because I I've got to get that review for the Wakira 250 done. But it's 2 degrees outside.
Mm-hmm.
That's cold.
Yeah, I know. It's the weather's coming around. I'm not looking forward to it. You know, the other crazy thing, too, is just mentioning back to what we were talking about a little bit is, you know, you go through the different phases and everything. But sometimes they come back around like, you go through the Warbird phase and then you might go through the fast plane 3D aerobatic. But then eventually, like down the road or something, it may come back around and you may go, hey, you know what? I haven't had or flown some Warbirds for a while, or they got some new ones coming out, man, the detail and everything. So then you find yourself, you're back into, you know, the Warbirds for a little while, or like me, I'm still kind of into the big high wing trainer type planes, but I like them overpowered, you know, so where I can fly fast, slow, do a little aerobatic stuff with them. So now getting in with the Phantom 3, doing more aerial stuff. So it's just crazy how it just keeps evolving round and round, and you know, it's just fun.
And it's funny because people push me in different directions. My good friend Scott, who we chat a lot on Instagram and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's from Australia, and he's sending a 3D plane to me. He's like, man, because I was describing the field issues, and he's gone through the same thing. And he says, I've got one sitting here. It was from a friend. He did something, and he says, look, you know, half on the shipping, and we'll send it over to you. So and that's in BC. So I'll see that next week. And he's like, you've got to get to do some more 3D. You got to really step it up. And then I've got Jason's Fat Hawk, and we're working away through that. And it's all these things. And I'm just sitting there going, I need more time, and I definitely need more daylight now.
Yeah, it's the big problem, you know, and you're starting to get them too. I get a lot of emails like, hey, why don't you guys do a podcast once a week, or talk longer, or do this and do that. And like, I would love to, if I could just do this full time, you know, we could get together and do these things. And I have so many ideas. It would be fantastic, but it just at this point, it's not going to happen. Maybe down the road, I'm keeping our fingers crossed. Maybe something will happen. And this is something we could do full time, you know, do the podcast. I would love to do testing and reviews and stuff like that and put out, you know, 2-3 podcasts a week or something like that, maybe with some video podcasting, or that would be the ultimate goal. Now, you know, down the road, if it happens, I that would be fantastic. But at this point, with our daily lives and our work schedules and our kids and everything, trust me, guys, I would love to come down here a couple times a week and put out a podcast. And I think it'd be possible if we had a little bit more time and structure, you know, to get more content and everything. But it's pretty tough right now, even, as you kind of finding out, Andre, to get one out every couple weeks.
Yeah. And the podcast, we talked about, the 1 week, and I just went, you know, is there enough content for us in a span of a week? You know, are there enough releases? You know, do we get out to fly? And so, it would have to be almost a full-time gig to deal with that, because otherwise you're not generating enough ideas to make the content fresh, you know? And, you know, like you said, we can only talk about the Radiant so much.
right. Exactly. I see Eric Monroe popped on Periscope. So, Eric, I think you're listening. I want to get you in the studio. Sit down and we'll do some Phantom 3 talk, maybe take some questions. So if you're interested, let me know. Plus, I want to get together and fly with you. So let me know, buddy.
Man, he says good morning.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, actually, and even pulling, I'd love to talk to Chad about that, his recent trip down to Hawaii. With
I seen that.
Oh, man.
Dirty dog. I couldn't believe that. Hey, another real quick thing, the t-shirt design, had a lot of emails on that too. Yes, keep it coming. We've had a few entries come in. We've had a few good ones. We definitely would like to do something. Bixler already said, hey, you know, if you really want to, he didn't see a problem to get some after hours t-shirts out there, but send them in. If you got any ideas, you guys know what we like, you know, some gliders or DLGs and us goofy guys and maybe a crazy Canadian or something. Just send in some designs. I like to see them. They're funny. And we'll try to come up with something. And hopefully down the road here, we'll get some shirts out for you guys. Another quick thing. I got to give the guys a shout out from Flight Test, Bixler and Peter and Alex and all those guys. I've had a VersaCopter, kind of an early design for a while that I have, and now seeing the final product that's come out and the build video and everything, I got to give them a shout out that is a well built quadcopter. You know, they put a lot of work and effort into that thing, and for the price and what you're getting, even with everything, the electronics and everything, I'm really impressed with that. And I don't know if you've seen too much about it, Andre, or watched the build video or anything, but and I will say the guys put everything through a massive test. Like, you know how Alex flies. Peter loves to crash things. Alex is always pushing the limits. So it's not like, you know, that they just design something and cut it out, put it together and say, here it is. It is a well thought out, nice flying, well built, heavy duty, you know, FPV, race quad, whatever you want to call it. I'm impressed. I really was with it. So I just.
And even Austin was flying in the video. So that was awesome to see, you know, because, you know, he admits himself, he's just coming along, you know.
Right.
And you know, his flying was superb. So yes, they have come through and they've taken their time and they've built a product that will step people through that initial, you know, quad and go right up. And I can't wait to see some of the other versions. You know, Alex's hopped up thing was just a rocket ship, according to Josh in the video, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to see what else they come out with. I can't wait to see what, like, you know, what Eric comes up with as far as an AP platform and everything, to see what this thing can do and the capacity. And the design is just cool. I got to get my hands on one to have a look at it.
Yeah, I was thoroughly impressed with it. So if you guys were on the fence or thinking about it or whatever, just get one. You can't beat the price. And for the quality and what you're getting and everything, it's unbelievable. So I just had to give them a little shout out for that. They did a lot of hard work on that.
And then Peter's Bushwhacker, I put huge props up to him and the editing team for that video they created. That they've taken that product to another step.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Absolutely.
The whole description and the process. And you know what was fascinating for me is watching, you know, we've become very accustomed to watching how Josh builds his aircraft. And mm-hmm. then Peter's got some very different philosophies of how to apply the glue and everything. And I was really taking note of that as I watched it. So it's been an impressive journey so far watching the flight test philosophies and the evolution of their video product, especially because, I mean, that's my background. I'm a video editor, so I look at this stuff
really
intently, right?
Yeah.
So I've been, you know, really impressed.
Right. It's funny you say that because, I make my little goofy videos and stuff and edit them a little bit, and then I'm like, I don't know if I even want to send these to Andre because you're going to look at this and go, oh, man, look what he's doing here. Look what he's – I don't know, but –
No. I'm sorry. That Phantom 3 platform, that, you know, you could probably be, you know, just hovering in one spot and the output is gorgeous.
Yeah. I just, all right, we're moving on here. Let's get into some, good stuff. Hey, one thing we're going to talk about real quick that was all over the news here this week. And I was actually kind of shocked when I read it, and it'll be interesting to see where this goes and how it pans out a little bit. And I'm sure, actually, Andre, you're the one that sent me the link first. And then after that, I think my Twitter kind of blew up. The FAA proposes a $1.9 million fine for unauthorized drone use for a company called Skypan. I believe they were out of Chicago. And I'll read you a little bit here. This is from dronelife.com. The FAA announced the largest civil penalty to date proposed against a drone operator for violating airspace restrictions. The $1.9 million proposed fine is aimed against Skypan International of Chicago, provider of a proprietary RPV remote piloted vehicles for production of high-end aerial panoramic photography. The FAA alleges the company flew 65 unauthorized drone flights over various locations in New York City and Chicago between March of 2012 and December of 2014. 43 of these in the highly congested and restricted New York Class B airspace. The FAA claims that Skypan operated flights in the New York Class B airspace without receiving prior air traffic control clearance. Additionally, the FAA alleges that Skypan's drone was not equipped with the required two-way radio, transponder, or altitude reporting equipment. The FAA further alleges that on 65 flights, the aircraft lacked an airworthiness certificate and effective registration, and Skypan did not have a certificate of waiver or authorization for the operation, states the FAA press release. The FAA website shows that the Section 333 exemption was granted to Skypan in April of 2015. What do you think of that? What do you make of this?
I'm wondering if it was a big airship, because this sounds like something that was a little larger than your average quad, a store-bought quad, I should say.
Mm-hmm. I'm just baffled, like, it now after 65 flights, if they've known they've done this, you know, which was some of them were back in 2014. Why are they going after him now and saying, okay, we're giving you a $1.9 million fine? Why didn't they kind of go after them maybe after the first few flights or something that they'd known about before and say, hey, what you're doing's wrong. We're going to fine you $5,000. This is what you need, blah, blah, blah. I'm kind of baffled by why you're doing this now after 65 flights.
I wonder if it was a sting. I wonder if they were just, you know, watching and setting a precedence.
It's very possible, and you know, I thought of that point too. But it's just interesting to see where this is going to go and how it's going to play out, because I think this could be a big turning point for people, you know, in this kind of business doing things like this. So I was shocked. I really was. I didn't even know what to really make of this. But so we'll have to see where it goes.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to find out what kind of craft it was, because from the description, it sounds like it might be a little bigger than your average, you know, something swinging 12-inch props kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the equipment they're getting, they're being, you know, looked at, so transponder and stuff like that. That tells me it's a larger size aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
It may not have even been a quad. I don't think. Maybe it was, you know, more of a UAV airplane style, because they were doing 3D mapping or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, it's hard to say.
Right. And I popped on their website a little bit, and they've been doing stuff like this for years too. So it's not like they just all of a sudden popped up in in a few years ago. Yeah, actually, looking here, the flights actually were back in March of 2012 through December 2014. So, yeah, they've been doing this for quite a while. And I would think if they thought they were doing something wrong or illegal, they wouldn't have that many flights. I don't know. Yeah. So we'll have to see how that plays out. A few other quick things here. I don't know if you've seen poor E-Week down there in Georgia.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Being told don't even bother coming up from, Triple Tree or whatever.
I mean, that's right, yeah. Triple Tree. Yeah, which is in, is that North or South Carolina? I can't remember. I think
you're asking a Canadian?
South Carolina? No, I can't remember. I should know this, but I've never been there.
South.
Yeah, South Carolina,
thank you,
I believe.
Instagram. Periscope.
Yeah, did you see some of the videos of the water that was rolling down through there?
I guess, I saw some of the earlier stuff from Hobby King, and they were saying, most of the vendors didn't, they just bailed because it was just way too risky.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Yeah, they, I guess, physically told people, do not show up here. Do not come down here.
Yeah. Well, we saw what we did to the lawn at Flight Fest. Imagine that place.
Oh man, it was unbelievable. So I really felt bad for those guys. That's probably one of the top events in the country down here. And I watched some of the Hobby King update videos there, and even when they were down there cruising around, you look around, there was really nobody there. So. Hey, I did see too on one of the videos Hobby King had is they had quite a bit of time on their new Tundra that's supposed to be coming out.
Mm.
Man, I'm telling you, I really have my eye on that thing.
You know, I have eye on it for part. I think it comes with skis. I'm like, skis for the Fun Cup. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, that thing looks so much, just watching the flight videos and everything, that not only looks, but flight characteristics and everything looks so much like the Fun Cub. It's unbelievable.
But you have one in a box waiting to go.
I know.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of excited to see that thing come out and really interested in what the price point's going to be of that thing.
Yeah. I know the and speaking of some of their new products, that Skipper XL, I was
That
looks so good.
Yeah.
And then the quote on the pricing was even more than what I paid to bring the P40 in, like $80 US.
Oh, really?
That's an airplane, for heaven's sakes. Wow. Right? So it's, but you know, it's got almost a 900 mil. It's a Delta with a 900 millimeter wingspan.
Uh-huh.
So it's big.
Yeah, I watched a few of the videos on there, and what was cool is the one time they were flying it off that pond, that water was rough. That thing, man, handled it no problem.
Yeah, that would be – I would have a lot of fun with that, especially on the snow and everything. But I'm like, I don't need something that massive, so –
Yeah. Speaking of Hobby King, this is another subject that kind of blew up the internet a little bit.
Oh, yes.
They had a big free shipping thing going on. And, you know, if anybody's on their mailing list, pops right in, hey, free shipping for this, blah, blah, blah. And then instantly, I mean, it probably wasn't 10 minutes later, people, again, the internet was blowing up like, hey, what are they doing? They're advertising free shipping, but they bumped all their prices up $20, $40. This is, I mean, it literally blew up.
Yes.
So what happened or what they were thinking, and I think you screen capped a little thing from Stuart too, and I think they realized, again, it could have been a mistake. I don't know. How could you not advertise free shipping and not realize that people are going to notice the price increases?
Yeah, I mean, I was all like, oh, okay, you know, I've really been waiting to get the batteries for the P40 and the battery, yeah, $5 a piece. The P40 alone jumped by $50.
Wow.
So yeah, they're quite aware, as Stuart replied saying, yes, it's I think yeah. So unfortunate. It was a bad move on their part. I know what they were trying to do, but you know, if you're going to raise the shipping price, don't put the free shipping at $150. If you're going to raise the price and cover shipping, well then, you know, do like the other suppliers and just whatever item it is, and shipping isn't really. I prefer as a purchaser who frequently buys from them, just leave it the way it was. I know what my prices were because I've got my log and I know what I want to buy, and I'm waiting always, and when I have a chance to get something and I need something, don't tack the shipping onto the value of the item, because most of the items now from the international store are almost more expensive. Well, this event's going on. Hopefully they'll go back, resort back to normal, but they're more expensive than out of the U.S. store. And I can't order from the U.S. store. I could theoretically ship to Augsburg, but then I'm tying up 4 hours of my day or whatever, 2 to 4 hours doing my commute to go it up. And I still got to bring it across. And I'm like, no, I just rather wait and buy, because the shipping rate out of international for me isn't too bad. I mean, there's a 10-day delta, or if I buy batteries, I go through FedEx and I have them on my doorstep in like under 48 hours. So, but it's unfortunate, and hopefully they correct it, because this is like the the Volkswagen incident, you know, this can do harm. I mean, people will become upset and just say, okay, you know, and you know, a lot of our friends were speculating locally that, you know, that kind of jump and increase, especially coupled with the exchange rate, the local guys, the local shop owners, you know, they're dancing with joy, because all of a sudden, you know, look at that, you know,
right?
The price is no longer economical to buy from them. So,
yep. So that was a pretty big debacle. I figured we had to throw that out there a little bit, and
Hopefully it will resolve itself and things will go back to normal in time for Christmas when the Spitfire is released.
Right. All right. We're going to bounce around. We're going to be all over the place today. I just was laying in bed last night just kind of writing down notes and reading off of here. So we're all over the place. So bear with us. But I had a bunch of questions come in. Some of them were off the forums. I've been kind of getting on the All Things Podcasty stuff a little bit, and some email questions mixed in. But one thing we were talking earlier that reminded me of, I think it was an email question, is somebody wrote in and said, you know, I'm starting to get and I know, Andre, you're kind of running into this problem too. Your basement's filling up with planes. And a lot of times I'd be like, my wife would always go, man, you got a lot of planes down there. You know, what do you got, 30, 40? I'm like, nah, and I'm trying to think in my head. And it always came to that magic number. I'm like, I don't know, 12, maybe 15. But then when I look at my radio, and at the time I had a 30 model memory, and it was completely full, and I kept having to switch them back and forth from the SD card. And I'm like, you know what? I guess I do have a lot of planes. So his question was, how do you know at what point on kind of what to get rid of or when to clean house or whatever? Now, I finally got to the point where I had no more room. The garage was full. The basement was full. And I had a hard time getting rid of stuff. I just like, oh, man, but I don't want to get rid of this. I'll hang on to it a little longer. Finally came to the realization, okay, it's time. I got to do something. I got to get rid of some of these planes. So what I've been doing the last few years actually is there's usually a pretty good swap meet, actually a couple of them, usually around February or March every year. I kind of look at the planes that maybe I haven't flown in at least a year or a little longer that have an inch of dust on them out in the garage, and I really tell myself, am I going to fly that in the next, you know, 3, 4, 6 months? You know, is it something I really want to hang on to? And at that point, usually if it's I'm on the fence with it, it's gone. And so that's kind of my logical thinking anymore. If I haven't flown it for over a year and I'm really kind of put off and it's sitting in the corner, you know what? I'm off in it. So that's what I've been doing, cleaning house. And it's at first it kind of bothered me, but now I'm okay with it. And I've come to the realization with that money, I just turn around, I end up buying something new or a new product. And after it's gone and I got something new, I don't even really even think about it, except maybe I come across pictures of it on my phone every now and then. And somebody will say, hey, I'm flying this. Like, hey, I used to have one of those or whatever. So I think you're starting to come into that same situation there, Andre.
Yeah, I've become very selective about what I order, and this year was a bit of an experiment, and you know, like the FW-190, which I'm planning on flying today. I look at everything, and I'm still feeling out what I like about them, and that, like, there's no two airplanes that are the same right now in the fleet, but all of a sudden there's the P-40. There's a used Durafly Mustang that I've picked up that's coming in, and then there's more 3D planes, and then I'm looking at the Durafly Spitfire at winter, and I'm like, oh, do I really, really, really need all these things? And now I'm in the point where I've run out of wall space to hang these up, and I'm gonna have to, you know, put them in the garage, and I'm like, oh, do I want to put them in the garage? Because I'm worried about the conditions and everything. So I think I've pretty well capped myself off, and unless there's something real special in 2016, I think my year is going to be basically fly what I got and just go from there, which I'm a little worried because it doesn't mean that I can, you know, I can impart some of the experiences that I've had, and we can add content and everything. So it's interesting from that point. So I don't know if I had to get rid of something, I'm not sure what I would get rid of.
It's tough.
Every plane so far, I've got very little replication right now. There's a few odd things, but it's things like, okay, I've got, you know, those two, the two smaller 3D planes, one I'm testing and the other one I'm going to be learning on.
Mm-hmm.
They're there because I'm terrified of dropping the Sukhoi,
mm-hmm.
because it's so nice. And I'm like, I want to learn how to hover and do Harrier rolls and stuff like this, but I don't want to do it on that airplane because I could just see myself destroying that thing in 30 seconds flat. So,
right. It'll come down to the point where you're like, okay, it's time to get, you know, you'll figure it out.
Yeah. And then I've been enjoying the quads, and I've really, you know, getting my hands on that multi-RC HMB 235 has really brought me back into enjoying quad flying again. Mm-hmm. And so that's ready to go this afternoon. And, you know, and I guess that's what's really nice about those guys is you can fly them in your backyard if you need to, and they hang up on a wall really
right.
nicely, which
right.
is what I've done with the last two.
Yeah.
But the planes, I'm like, oh, and I got the Pawnee still coming in later on
this
month.
That's right.
Ugh.
I'm excited for that. Really excited.
That one could be a really lifesaver come this winter when it's a little, well, I mean, once we get the snow, you know, in the weekends, there's enough daylight, but into the evening, there's a couple nights now this week where I haven't had the time, but I'm like, oh, I wish I could get out. So I want something nice and bright. And just, so if I even have a half an hour, just get out and blow off some steam and relax.
Right. All right, now on to the next one here. I think this was from the forums. Crash Bandicoot wanted to know when we put our Radiants away. And I will tell you, they're almost put away now. It's almost at that point. We'll probably get them out a little bit coming into fall. The thermal flying really isn't happening too much, but you get those kind of those windy days where you can get the things up, you know, and just kind of surf around on the wind. We really don't fly them too much at all in the wintertime. So we probably got them maybe another month at the most, and then they'll probably be put in the garage for the winter. So
I've got that. I might be trying it today too, depending on how much time I have at the field. But I've got the FPV, the Mobius FPV rig strapped to my extra canopy. I'll be trying that today. But I want to try it this winter. But well, you saw my comment there. I said it's fine and dandy to get the plane up in the air and maybe fly for 20 minutes. But by the time you land, yeah, you're not going to be moving because your feet will be frozen.
Right, exactly.
So even if I get my hands into the transmitter mid, at that point, you're up there so long that your feet just, you know, are going to freeze up. So I still want to try it over the winter because, you know, we do have nice days come February where if the wind is down, the cold temperature doesn't really bother me as much. It's the wind chill.
Mm-hmm.
So if the wind's not there and, you know, I don't get thermal fly around here, so it's all wind based and everything, but still, you know, to be able to punch something up for 20 minutes, that's relatively stress free and everything would be fun. So I'm going to try it. It may be just like my EFX experience last year where I end up, you know, giving myself frostburn and going, nope, we tried it once. We know, no.
Right, right. Exactly. Another question, Breezer Fish, he wants to know how the After Hours crew got involved with flight test. And I think I got to take into consideration a lot of this we've talked about before, but we get a lot of new listeners every month. So, you know, if they don't get back to some of the earlier podcasts or know, you know, how everybody got involved. So I'll tell the story again. It's kind of interesting, I guess. My real good buddy, Pat, who I kind of got into RC flying with, we used to fly every day, all the weekends together. And we were over at his house one day and he says, hey, I want to show you something. And we've always kind of talked a little bit of how it would be cool to see some good reviews of products or something, you know, that they went into a little bit more detail, you know, because, you know, back in the day, we didn't have, you know, 8-9 years ago or whatever, you're probably lucky to get 4 or 5 new products a year. It seemed like you were always on the fence and waiting for that new Park Zone Warbird at the time or whatever. So, and it was really difficult, you know, to what you were going to spend your money on. So, we were over at his house. He says, hey, I got to show you this video. And it was the very first flight test video, the one with the Wildcat, and we watched it, and I looked at him, I said, Pat, that is unbelievable, you know, the quality of the video and what they did and how they did it and made it fun and interesting and entertaining. I said, that is unreal. And he goes, you know what the good part is? He said, they're right down in Navarre. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. They're doing this here in Navarre? So I was really shocked. So I got to talking to Chad a little bit on RC groups, and it was kind of funny. He was in there, I think, scrounging around on the FPV forums a lot because he was just getting in the FPV. And he was getting slammed pretty good, and it kind of upset me. And Pat and I kind of went on the defense and was really kind of defending Chad for a while. And it got pretty heated. And so that calmed down. He's like, hey, if you guys want, just come on down, bring some planes. You know, we're going to fly afterwards and hang out. Excuse me. And have some fun. I'm like, heck yeah, man, we'll come down. So I can't really say what episode, you know, if it was like the third or fourth one or something. I know it was relatively just at the very beginning. So we loaded up, I think, one Saturday and went down and hung out. And that's the first time we got to meet, you know, Josh Scott and Bixler and Eric Monroe and Michael Caminetti and, of course, Chad. And everybody was just so welcoming and fun to be with. And that was a thing that really brought me to flight test, because Pat and I would hang out and it was just him and I, and it was really hard. You know, you're scouring the internet, always looking for new products or things that would come out, and you really had nobody, or at least I didn't, to really share everything with or talk to. You know, Pat was, he traveled quite a bit for work, and it was just frustrating. You know, I'd spend hours and hours on RC groups, you know, talking with people or reading the forums or whatever. So to find a group of people like Flight Test that was that passionate to sit down and share the flying stories and the excitement of flying and everything that went on. It was unbelievable for me. So I can't remember if it was that weekend or whatever, but Chad's like, hey, we're going to do a night episode coming up. Do you guys have anything that flies at night? And I'm like, funny you mentioned that. I actually do. I got a couple UFOs with lights all over them. He's like, you do? And I'm like, yep. He goes, fantastic. Bring them down. We're going to shoot an episode. So that's how it really all began. Pat and I came back down and we shot the night episode. And ever since then, I think I started going down and just hanging out, just helping out just almost with, every episode. And then, Wayne, which, if anybody knows, he's related to Chad. So he started, you know, same thing, was getting back into the RC and flight test came and he just started hanging out and it just went from there. So that's kind of the story and I've been here ever since.
part of the woodwork now, man.
Yeah, a little bit. The funny thing was, especially now too that David's gone, is, you know, I really miss shooting on the weekends and hanging out with everybody, and you really got to know what was going on and what's coming down in the works and things that was they were working on and everything. Where now it's almost a complete opposite. It's like, yeah, I'm still around. We do the podcast and everything, but I don't get to talk to the guys on a regular basis, and especially here lately with work and everything. We've been doing the podcast on Saturdays. Is I don't even get to really talk to them, so I don't really know what's going on or what's in the works a lot of times, unless I catch Bixler here and there, and he's like, "Hey, man, I want to show you this," or "This is what we're doing," and blah blah blah. So sometimes I'm like everybody else out there. I don't find out anything until I see it on the internet or a video, and I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't even know that was going on. So I really do miss it, but unfortunately, you know, they're growing, and this is their daily job. So I'm just catching up, just kind of like the normal fan, I guess you could say. So, but we'll see what happens. I'm hopefully down the road things will work out and maybe we can get our foot in the door a little bit more and go from there. We'll see. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got started in with flight tests. A couple more questions here and then maybe we'll move on to some products here. This was a question from Michael Kaler and he wanted to know, and I thought about this question for a long time and I don't really have a specific answer, but Andre, I'll throw it out there to you too. He wanted to know, list your best flight or favorite flying moment. Was it because of the plane? Was it because where you were flying, or was it the day or whatever? But he just kind of wanted to know what was favorite or best flying moment. So I'll throw it out to you first, Andre, if you have one.
Oh, I have a couple. I think for me, it was when we, when I built that first cargo plane, and that went up, and there's a really awesome video. So that was a Mikey's RC YC-14, and you know the video, the guys threw the plane in the air, and it went, and it was just, you know, really awesome to do that. You know, and that was my eye opener when I got back into the hobby. And that was 2013, and you know, look how things have changed. More recently, I have to say, the Radian experience at Flight Fest for me, and that's people oriented. Uh-huh. That's just standing with you guys. You know, I mean, talk about talking up and hyping an event, but just, you know, it's awesome to have a friendship like this. But you know, to be able to actually be one on one with everybody after all that time is the real experience for me. So
right. Yeah, I have to kind of agree that it's crazy now with the internet and the network and everything where you're chatting with people all around, not just here, but all over the world. And you go to a flying event and meet these people and see these people and talk to these people and hang out and you share the passion and the flying. After it's over, you know, I think we talked about it in everything. You think about it and it's almost it's unbelievable and sad at the same time to where, you know, you meet these people and hang out. It's just the best experience. But then when it's over, you're almost sad because you got to wait a whole year to do it again.
Yeah. And it's funny because, I mean, we had some really awesome comments on the forum this week, and I'm like, well, guys, I'm just your average dude, you know? It's like,
Right.
thank you for putting me into those categories, especially with Peter and David. And I'm like, I'm just your average normal guy who's been really fortunate to step into this, I guess, what do you want to call this, a role? And just, you know, we're just having fun, and it's a huge privilege for me to be able to do something like this, and just, you know, being able to correspond and provide a voice, if you will. So it's yeah, I mean, this experience for me has been, it's been a hugely positive, and it's the whole thing. And you know, there's days where you and I are we're dog tired from whatever we do, and you know, and this is just kind of like just super. Just a really nice uplifting way to spend, you know, a couple hours at the end of the day, you know.
Right. And there's been so many moments, especially hanging out with flight test guys, and Eric, you know, he can attest to this too. There's so many moments, whether it was before filming or after filming or behind the scenes stuff that went on at flight test that just unbelievable. I'd go home and I'd go, I just can't believe what we just did or saw or whatever, and just make me laugh. I always went home after a flight test, you smiling and laughing. You know, it was just such a good time. But one story, I've shared it before, and again, I know we have some new listeners, so I'll throw it out there again. Andre, I'm sure you've heard it too. One of the best times I ever had, and I wish Wayne was in the studio with me to share his see his comments and share his side of it. But there's a place actually not too far down the road, a few miles down from Flight Fest, called The Farm. And it is a well-known giant hill that you can thermal off of, and what's the word I'm thinking of? Not de-essing, but slope soar off of. And read about it. We've talked to people that were there and this and that. So one day, Wayne and I were like, you know what, let's go down and check this out. So we drove down there, and it really is just a working farm. You drive down this little tiny road, and you look up, and there's this giant hill. So we thought, well, you know, we knocked on the door, nobody was home. Everybody told us it's no big deal, people fly there all the time. So we thought, well, I guess the worst they could do is maybe call the cops, you know, so let's go for it. So we parked like alongside the road, grab our radians and our gear, and I had toolbox and everything. And I mean, this was a hike. Like, it's probably, it seemed like over a mile just going, walking up this hill, and you're going through, you know, briars and thickets and all kinds of stuff. So we started to head up, and about three quarters of the way up, we noticed that there seemed to be quite a few cows up on the top of the hill. So we kept going, and as we were cresting the top, we were met with, I not this is no exaggeration because I think I counted them, no, probably less than 20 bulls staring us down, like, what are you doing here? And it was very intimidating, and we just kind of froze for a little while, and I'm like, Wayne, what do you want to do here? This doesn't look like a good situation. He's like, man, I don't know. So I'm like, you know what? I grew up on a farm. I've been around cows for a long time. I'm like, I think we're going to be okay. So we kind of went off to the side, set our stuff down. I said, I'm going to walk to the top and see how they act and what they're going to do. If you see me bolting down over the hill, run. So I did. I ventured up on top the hill. They all kind of stared me down for a little while, and then they seemed to calm down. Everything was good. So we grabbed the rest of our gear, went up to the top of the hill. The crazy part is we flew there probably at least, I'm going to say at least 3 hours total time, and with cows all around us. I mean, they just went about their business, eating and roaming around, and they never bothered us. But to getting to that point, and then the flying experience, you know, we flew at one point, I was an hour and a half, and granted, this was no motor, Andre. This was throw the radiant off the hill, instantly go up as far, spec it out, drop it back down, take it back up, spec it out, no motor for an hour and a half. And it literally just got to the point where my neck and everything, I was tired, it was hurting. I'm like, I got to land. And Wayne, I've never seen a guy smile like this in my entire life. He was the happiest man on earth. And we were there again for like 3 hours. And that was probably, I have a few pictures, and I think I might even throw them out on Instagram a long time ago. But that was probably as far as an actual flying moment, that had to be right at the top of the list. Unfortunately, we've been trying to go back there since, and it just hasn't worked out. And I think we're too far down in the season right now, unless we get an unusual 60-70 degree day with winds coming out of the south here coming up. I don't know if we'll make it down there this year or not, but we definitely got to get back there and do that again. It was unreal.
Well, it sounds like a good spot even just to fly in general up high. Yeah, I've been looking around for a spot, but I mean, I can relate that for that one time, the first weekend I had the Radian out, you're just sitting there going, what an experience. Here we are. We're talking about Radian, folks.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, the guys on Periscope were talking about the Flight Fest event where we were all soaring around together. So I know. I have to find that. I'm really scared about having to find a new venue to fly out of next year, but it's just – yeah, it's everything we talk about, just getting together with the guys. And I enjoy getting together with the guys at my flying field just as much. And it's funny, there's times there that I had that one weekend where I was really occupied, and I ended up spending more time chatting with the guys than actually flying because I just wasn't happy with the conditions, right? But it's just nice to get out. It's a social – that's the wonderful thing about flying these days too. It's a very social thing too.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you how many times Pat and I went out on a Saturday morning, and we used to go out really early. I mean, in the summer times, we were out there ready to go at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and we would probably spend 45 minutes of flying and 2 hours of talking.
Yeah, I'd land and say, oh, it's I got to get home get to mowing the lawn and stuff like that, and realize, you know, an hour later, I haven't left because of chatting away with the guys, and we're talking about, you know, what's up and coming, and lots of interest on the P-40. Actually, my local buddies are all razzing me because I haven't had it out yet. And I'm like, I haven't had time to get her going yet.
I'm surprised. I am completely shocked you haven't had that thing in the air yet.
Well, it's been cold or really windy, and this week has just been a little dominating for other non-flying considerations, mm-hmm. And I admit I'm finding the prospect of flying this plane remotely terrifying.
Uh-huh. I knew it. Yep.
It's a considerable investment.
Yes. Yep.
So, no, like today's goal, after we're done with the podcast, once the temperature comes up and the conditions of the field dry out a bit, I'll be out with some you know, worthy aircraft to get my stick time in.
Mm, good. I can't wait to hear about that. And I'm hoping, fingers crossed, everything goes good for the maiden. And
That should be Monday. That should be Monday, huh?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
We have the Canadian Thanksgiving weekend here. So Sunday is – tomorrow is Turkey Day.
Uh-huh.
So I'll be cooking a turkey for the family. And then Monday, I'm hoping that the conditions are right, that the P-40 will go up. I'll be doing 3S, the 2200, the A-spec to 2200, so I may have to add a little bit of nose weight, but long-term it will be 4S 2200s.
Oh, awesome. All right, hey, let's shift gears here a little bit and get into a few new products we'll talk about a little bit. Not a whole lot out there, but there are a few things. One thing I missed, Andre, and I don't know if you've seen it. I haven't heard too much about it, but I know it's out there or coming soon. Helimax has a new Voltage 500 3D aerobatic quadcopter coming out, and it's actually not out yet. I think it's coming soon. But again, this is another one of those 3D quadcopters where the motors reverse, kind of like what Horizon did with the little 200. And I don't know. I mean, I guess it's okay, and they've done a lot of testing, I'm sure, but it just seems so crazy to me that you're taking those motors and, you know, this has got four 1400 kV reversible motors on it. You're doing 1400 kV on one and then instantly stopping that thing and reversing it for 3D. Down the road, how them things would hold up, but I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see.
So it does like a hard stop on the motor and spins in the other direction.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's exactly what Horizon got their little 200 quad to do the 3D maneuvers, like inverted hovers and, you know, and all the maneuvers. It just reverses the motors, which in a way is kind of cool. And it's a great concept if you think about it. So, but a little bit of the specs. Like I said, 1400 reversible brushless motors. 8.9 propellers together with motors provide needed power for aggressive 3D aerobatics. They did put different flight modes on it, kind of like what Horizon's been doing. Has stability mode for safe 3D learning limits. Maximum tilt angle 45 degrees built into the flight controller. When the quad sticks are centered, the quad levels out. 3D mode, no limits on the tilt angle, and the quad will not self-level. It's got a pre-programmed gyro tuned with three-axis gyro and accelerometers. And big comments, too. It does say it does not have a low-voltage cutoff.
Interesting.
Hybrid carbon fiber and G10 and machined aluminum, high visibility, easy orientation. Flight controller compatible with Futaba. S-Bus standard PWM when used with S-Bus encoder. Compatible with a wide range of 3 and 4 cell LiPo batteries. That's about it really on that. But so that would be kind of interesting. Them 3D quadcopters, they're getting a little bit more popular. And with this motor reversing thing, you don't have all the belts and pulleys and all that stuff. So it's, I'm going to keep my eye on it and see how things go with these things. So that was one thing we missed here for Helimax. Let me switch sites here. Did you see Spectrum finally came out with a new AR7700 receiver for multicopters?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, for mainly multicopter, but finally something with actually they've it's a nice looking radio because it will do your PPM, your S-Bus, and I think it'll do S-Bus without a converter cable, which is kind of nice over your satellite and everything. So too bad, not too shabby.
Compatible with popular multi-rotor flight controllers, requires just one connector from the receiver to the controller. Three connection options: serial, PPM, and remote receiver. Small, lightweight, easy to install. 8 channels with PPM connection. Access to 8 or more channels with a remote receiver. 2 auxiliary ports, 1 gear port. Compatible with DSM2 and DSXM transmitters. So that's pretty cool. And the price isn't that bad, $60. I might have to pick one of these up, I think, and give it a shot.
Yeah, I picked up on my – actually, I'm running it on the HMB. I picked up – I had a Long Whip Orange RX, and that was initially in the Radiant. Three channel, right? And actually it's got S-Bus out, so I had my dad actually, I gave him the specs and he built me a little cable, so that's what's running to my KK board now. So I'd like one cable out of it, and it's just a micro with a twin whip, so looking forward to that one. And then when I build that little tiny quad, I've got a single whip one, which was like on for like $7 from Hobby King at one point on sale. So it's nice to keep everything really compact, but this looks like a fairly nice receiver.
Yeah, it does for sure. Now, here's something I want to talk about that I'm on the fence about. I've watched a ton of the videos, read about it, and I just don't know what to make of it. So we'll get your opinion on this. And anybody out there, you know, comment on it or let me know, because I don't know what to think. But Horizon brought out it's called the Wizard Wand for the Chroma.
Oh, gosh.
And what this is it's just a remote. It looks like a TV remote controller that actually flies your quadcopter. I don't know. It says, works like a TV remote, standard flight and gimbal controls, point and fly function, smart mode, AP mode, return to home selector switch, follow me and tracking modes, water resistant. It comes with a water resistant carrying pouch and arm strap. Compatible with Chroma drones that include the ST10 controller. Requires iOS or Android device with compatible CGO app. I don't know. I watched the videos on it. I don't know. Did you
point
see?
And click?
Yeah.
Yes, I saw it. It's like, you know, it looks like they've taken a Wii controller and, you know, now you're flying your quad with that. I could see that, you know, okay, go over there, but I what's wrong with your remote control?
Yeah.
You know,
are they just trying to even simplify this even more for the person that has no idea or not in the RC to sell more Chroma products, because they think it'd be, hey, it's just it'll fly with a TV remote. You know what I mean?
It's got the little strap and the cover and everything, and I'm just I suppose it works, but I mean, what's stopping you from pointing in the wrong spot and flying your quad into a tree, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, I can see a few functions, you know, where if you're doing the follow me thing, you know, it's very simple to put it, you know, in an armband or in a back well, I don't know if I actually just put it in a backpack, but, you know, but to actually just fly the, and again, I watched the videos. It was weird. It was almost like somebody else was flying it with a remote control, you know, a regular remote. And then the guy was just pointing it around, you know, with the fake remote. And it was, you know what I mean? It was just really strange. So I don't know. We'll have to see how this one, I'm guessing for the people in the hobby that fly with a remote, they're not going to use this. So it'll be interesting to see how it sells. For a person that knows absolutely nothing about, you know, flying or just getting in the RC and wants a platform that they can fly with something that looks like a TV remote, they might be interested. I don't know. A couple things, more things here with Horizon. One thing too, I watched a few videos. The Mach 25 FPV Racer is out from Horizon.
Do you want me to tell you what that costs in Canadian dollars?
Yes, go ahead.
$570.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yep, $570. Wow. Plus taxes.
Wow.
Yeah, I think they missed the boat on this bad boy.
I've watched the videos. I've seen some people that already have them, did some unboxing, some little bit of reviews. Now, I was really down on it, and I seen it in person at the Toledo show and got to really check it out. And at one point, I was like, no way, way overpriced. But digging into it a little bit more, again, I think it is a little bit pricey. But the build quality is really good. With the carbon fiber and the aluminum and everything, it is built well. Now, the other thing that really kind of bothered me initially was the camera they put on it. Now, at first, the camera I thought was the same little kind of rinky-dink camera that comes on the Nano QX and the Vapor FPV and everything. But it is not. From my understanding in the videos I watch, and Horizon has one out also, the camera is updated, a lot better video quality, and it's a 25 milliwatt kind of race spec camera that's on the quad. And they also said that it's more than ample to be able to put your own board camera on it. So out of the box, it is ready to go for FPV and racing. So price point, I think, is a little bit pricey. For what you're getting, but the reviews I've seen on it so far, people really like it, and it does fly really well right out of the box. So, you know, if it's something where, hey, you got the money, you don't want to build and tune anything, you just want to pull it out, bind it to the radio, and I guess that's kind of part of the price point, when you can just pull it out, bind it to your Spectrum radio, and just go. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, we'll see. It is a nice-looking quad, though, I will say.
Well, would you risk a, you know, $500 quad in a race that you knew would get torn up? That's the question.
Yeah, good point. I wouldn't personally, no.
I don't make enough money to throw something away like that.
Yeah,
That's why I've really become a fan of that HMB quad. Mind you, what we're discovering, and it's probably exactly like the planes. We're starting in our quads. We're starting to go through. You know, you've got your Basher, then you've got your sweet sleek machine, and then, you know, is this like the Ferrari? I don't know.
Right, right. I agree. Okay, now another subject I want to bring out, because this is kind of baffling me also, and if anybody out there has any more information on this or can tell me more, I'd love to know. But last week, now generally, if everybody knows Horizon, they do their product, they release their new products on Thursdays. And was it, I don't know if it was last Thursday or the Thursday before, they had some stuff, new products come out, and I usually go through the list, and I get an email alert and everything. And I think we talked after we did our last podcast. I was going through their website, and I seen this new, it said right on it, bold letters, new Red Bull F4U Corsair Bind and Fly, 1400 millimeter. And I thought, that's weird. I went through their new product list, you know, what they had out, and they didn't really advertise it. So got to dig in a little deeper, and this is what they call a, and I'm going to goof up the name here. It's called a Stufenbiel, Staufenbiel, probably pronouncing that wrong. I know it's German, Stufenbiel F4U Corsair. And they also have another plane out. I have to look it up. It's a, I think a 3D aerobatic plane,
You got it right here. It is the, it's an Edge 540.
That's it, Edge 540. Now, initially, I'm looking at this, and I've had numerous FMS planes, mostly all warbirds. And looking at this, just initially, I thought, man, that thing really looks like an FMS airplane. And we've talked before, like they brought out the new 1200 millimeter P-51. They brought out the new Trojan. And again, they look very FMS style-ish, you know, everything about them. But reading on those, now I'm not saying that FMS isn't making those, but, you know, they have their receivers in, the Spectrum receivers. They say that it has the Z-foam construction. So I'm guessing that it's more the Horizon Hobby product because, you know, they're under the eFlight brand. Now, this having the different name on it, it still comes with a Spectrum receiver, but digging in a little bit more and looking at it, this is actually almost a complete replica of the FMS F4U Corsair V2 version. And if you really dig in and look at their pictures that they have on their website, on their on one of the boards, I don't know if it's the slowdown can't remember if it's maybe what is that module that FMS has in there? Like a sequencer, I believe, because it has gear doors on it. It says FMS right on it. Now, of course, that kind of blew up the forums a little bit. People are like, hey, what's going on? They're selling it. David Eshted, which, again, I just learned, Horizon's really going through this whole new process. A lot of people are leaving. They got a lot of new people coming in. If you notice, Andre, their social media here lately is just blowing up. They've really changed things around. They're doing a lot of stuff, and I give them credit for that because they're really getting involved with everything with their videos and stuff they're doing. So I applaud them for that. But David Eshted came on the forum and says, hey, look, guys, this company here is a company we bought I believe they're out of Germany. Horizon Hobby bought them. They do a lot of product and development testing and have their own, you know, stuff, and Horizon bought them. And if you go on the website, it's actually under, I believe it's modelhobby.ee, but it's spelled M-O-D-E-L-L. Hobby.e. They have a full website on there, and they got like three shops over in Germany. So my guess is FMS is built. Obviously, they're building these planes for this company. But I kind of got to applaud Horizon a little bit. They've been behind the curve a little bit on their warbirds, especially kind of in the 1400 millimeter range. So, you know, they put their own kind of little twist on it. It's an FMS plane, and they're selling under the Struffenbiel name. So there you have it. But for a while, I was really baffled by that. It really kind of took me, you know, by surprise that they're doing something like this. And why not advertise it? Why not throw it out there on the new product list with everything else? I mean, it really is kind of a new name, new company advertising, you know, even though, and again, I think personally, FMS builds some of the best warbirds out there for the price. They've been around for a long time. They've really take consideration of problems they've had in the past, updating planes. Like their P-51, I think, is on version 8, Andre. Just little things that they keep updating. Hey, we got a problem with this. They really listen to everybody on the forums. And I think FMS builds a lot of people's airplanes.
So we know that for sure.
Yes.
We know that. We've seen that.
Right. So it was just interesting, you know, to see a FMS plane under a different name on the Horizon Hobby website. So we'll see down the road. They might be making a lot more airplane for Horizon Hobby. I don't know. Yep. Maybe this was kind of like a test thing. We'll see how this goes and everything. The good thing is, I'm guessing here, I'm throwing this out there, Horizon has just unbelievable reputation for customer service and being able to get parts. So if you can get an FMS plane of this caliber and have their customer support and be able to use their receivers and, you know, get their parts, it could really work out well. You know what I mean?
Hey, it might be my avenue to finally own an FMS, but then I'm going to buy another warbird. What?
Right, exactly. exactly.
So, hey, I've got a product to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Last night, before I went to bed, I popped in and Alex Grieve got his last name correct this time.
Yeah.
IB Crazy was showing off their new video area systems DuraSpec receiver, sorry, transmitter, FPV transmitter antenna for the racing quads.
Okay.
And he spent a good 10, 15 minutes smacking, burning, running over, and just hammering away on this FPV antenna to show just how tough it is.
Really?
And I was stunned. He put it on his spectrum analyzer. Yeah, it still works. It's a little beat up. It's got this plastic cup. They've got like a puck coating on top of it now, a plastic cup.
Uh-huh.
That protects the antenna. It's great for, you know, you don't snag stuff. And then the actual clover leaf is embedded inside of a dielectric coat, he called it. So it's been, you know, it's been casted inside of a protective shell underneath the plastic coating. So he's smacking the hammer with it, breaks the plastic coat off like it's just plastic cover. And then inside, the actual lobes of the antenna are still wrapped and protected in this cone or this shell, I guess. And, you know, so he drove over top of the thing with a Volvo and just, you know, hammered it into the ground, you know, and then eventually he puts the antenna up on a rig, and he's actually got a vice clamp, and he's hanging himself off, all 160 pounds, what? He said, of himself. And then finally the cable broke, and he repairs the cable, puts the antenna back on the spectrum analyzer and goes. And at one point he, you know, dips the thing in and lets it burn for like 4 minutes. 4 minutes straight. It still works. So I'm like, oh, Alex, I got to talk about this product because you've come up with something great. I mean, I run his original Bluebeam still.
Yeah, on my right. Gear. So do I.
When I fly my HMB, I just do my home build thing, and I have like a ping pong ball on top of that so I don't catch any of the trees.
Uh-huh.
But that thing is amazing. I'm like, I so have to pick up one of those antennas, you know, just even on the transmission side for 5.8. I don't think if you step down to the 1.2s and some of the lower frequencies, you'll be able to do the same thing because the antenna scale is larger, obviously. But the 5.8, it's perfect.
Uh-huh.
But I was like, Alex, kudos, man. You've come up with a pretty phenomenal product. And if it is as tough and as durable as you've just demonstrated, why would you need anything else? Actually, it was funny because I'll mention at Flight Fest, I was saying, hey, you know, I'm thinking about getting some, you know, left-hand versus right-hand circular.
Yeah,
he says, you still got your blue beams. I said, yeah. He says, you don't need anything else, Andre. There's no point in me selling you anything else. You don't have enough FPV. You know, he says, how many guys are you flying FPV with?
Yeah.
Like I said, at most five. He says, you don't need any other antennas. I'm not selling you any other antennas.
I remember that. Yeah. That's funny.
So, yeah.
Wow, but that's interesting. I'll have to check that out.
I don't know if he's got the product listed anywhere yet. I still think he's beta testing, but obviously it'll be up on the Video Aerial System website or the Stone Blue guys very soon, I think. But kudos, Alex, man. You've really, I mean, the work they're doing with the you know, the racing league and everything, phenomenal. You know, there's a guy who's leading the way for us as far as, you know, FPV and multi-rotor and stuff.
Yeah, all those guys he hangs out with, Chris from, you know, Multi-GP and those guys, and man, they're doing a phenomenal job.
Oh, speaking of new things, and I'll throw this one out too.
Yeah.
Have you seen what Stone Blue Airlines came up with?
I seen a few things. You talking about the P-51?
The P-51 made out of their EPP foam.
I did see that.
And they do the laminating over top.
Uh-huh.
So it is as tough as my Wraith.
Yep.
But it's in a, and it's a belly lander. And yep. I'm like, oh, I that would be a phenomenal plane to get my hands on a test, because that would, that's that niche market that,
yeah.
I told Matt and crew there that, oh man, I think you guys might have just hit, and to be able to do FPV with it, cause that's what it's set up for.
Right,
and if it's
right.
Durable and lasts, oh man.
Right. Huh. Yeah. That was a cool plane. I did see that.
Yeah, and they tweeted out a little video earlier this week, and I'm like, Matt, lower, faster. So there we go. That's all I got so far.
Hey, this kind of reminded me a little bit when we were talking about FMS. If anybody doesn't mind, I might have told this story a long, long time ago, and again, we always have the new listeners, but I wanted to tell the story about how I found FMS. I had a real good friend of mine. He's still a good friend, but I haven't seen him in quite a while. He lives about an hour away north of here in Cleveland. His name is Eric. And how I met him was you know, as everybody always knows, I went from flying and then kind of got out of it a little bit and got into the RC cars and then got really heavily involved in the fifth scale cars. And we had a group of us called the 5B Club, and we all ran the HPI 5B buggies. And for probably 5 years, we hung out, traveled to Cleveland a lot. We had a place that we'd just go bash these things and hash things out and break things and fix things, and we just became really good friends. Well, when I kind of got back in, actually, flight test kind of brought me back into the flying part even more. So the fifth scale stuff after a while, and when I actually sat down and seen what I was spending, not only hours working on these cars and fixing them and the money being spent, you know, every time we ran those cars on a weekend, it was at least a $100 bill, whether, you know, some, whatever broke or something we were fixing. So when I looked at it, I thought, man, this is kind of getting out of hand. So when I got back into flying, Eric, I guess he said, you know, he always wanted to fly, and he was a little kid out at a flying field and always wanted to get into it. And he seen this guy crash this giant balsa plane, went into a million pieces, and he was so upset and just, you know, cussing and swearing, and he was picking up, and he said it just kind of turned him off, and he never kind of went into it after that. So when I got involved in flying, he came down, and I took him out, and he says, this is unbelievable. I absolutely love it. I let him fly a little bit, put him on the buddy box, and he was hooked. So, again, it's typical, you know, new guys. He gets home, he's surfing the net, he's looking all around, and I told him, you know, back then we didn't have the safe technology like we do now. So he was pulling it. He goes, Chris, what do you think of this plane? No, Eric, you don't want that. You're going to crash it in 30 seconds. You know, and he said, well, what about this plane? No, no. So he came across these FMS planes, and I kind of heard about them, was reading a little bit about them, but I thought, eh, I wasn't real sure. But the prices back then were even less than they are now, and from my understanding, they flew great. He says, well, I'm going to buy a P-51, and at that time, they were the 1400. This was like version one, version two that they had that came out. He says, I'm going to buy this P-51. I said, Eric, don't do it. It's not going to last. He goes, I don't care. I love the plane. I'm buying it, and I'm going to bring it down, and you're going to fly it. I'm like, okay, whatever. So he buys this P-51. He brings it down. We spent all morning putting the thing together, and at that time, I was like, wow, this is an impressive airplane. It's semi-scale. It's built well. The foam's good. Good detail. It's got the four-bladed prop. Nice motor. Electric retracts. I'm like, wow, this is impressive. And we took it out that day, and I made it and just was like blown away. For what you were getting at that price point at that time, it was unreal. So I think he flew on the buddy box once with it. And again, he's brand new, never flew before. So it was a treat trying to keep him in the air with that thing. But he had a blast, absolutely loved it. So he didn't even take the plane home. He actually left it at my house. He goes, don't worry about it. I'll just come down. We'll just fly. Okay. So back on the internet he was. He called me up again. He goes, hey, guess what? I bought another one. I bought a P-47. I want you to put it together. I'm like, Eric, you're crazy. Go buy yourself a trainer. He didn't want to listen. He wanted these Warbirds. He loved the Warbirds. So he brings a P-47 down, we got that all together, and we flew that. And again, it was great. Well, guess what? That one ended up at my house too. Couple weeks later, he calls me up again. Hey, guess what? I bought another FMS plane. I'm like, you're killing me. What did you get now? Well, he ended up buying the T-28. And again, brings it down. I flew that, and we had a blast with that thing. That T-28 FMS 1400 millimeter plane was probably one of the best flying Trojans I've ever flown. That thing was unbelievable. So he ended up taking that one home, and through, I would say, a year, he maybe came down once or twice after that and flew those planes. I was flying the daylights out of them. They're at my house. I had the batteries. I flew the daylights out of them. So long story short, he kind of got out of it. He just didn't have anybody to fly with up there. And, you know, trying to – our work schedules, he does a swing shift. Our schedules were way off. And I feel bad. He kind of fell off the radar and kind of got out of it. Even though to see that guy – he's the guy that actually I was I've told you the story, Andre, that I was kind of teaching him how to fly and was buddy boxing him on my other Fun Cub. And he's the one that got it in a power on dive when the wings folded up. And he was just ruined after that day when he crashed that airplane. I'm like, Eric, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. It's actually kind of my fault anyway, because I should have took the plane from you earlier and slowed it down. Honestly, I didn't think the wings were going to fold up like that, like they did. So it ended up, it's kind of funny, the P-51 went to Pat. Pat ended up buying that one. I bought the P-47 and had that for a long time. And actually, Wayne bought the T-28 and still has it to this day. So they kind of stayed in the family a little bit. So that's my FMS story. That's how I got involved with them and knowing about their airplanes.
I still want to try a 980, but at this point, like I said, it's everything to ship parts in and stuff like that. But if what we think is happening there with the Horizon products, maybe FMS might happen in some way or shape or form. But no, I look at their products, and particularly they've hit the 980 millimeter setup is pretty nice. Nothing wrong with the 1100s, but 980 millimeter on 4S, sweet.
I totally agree. And I've seen those planes in person. They had them at Flight Fest, and they were actually selling them the year before there. They are really built well. All right, hey, a few more products real quick. We'll get through these, and then we'll either take some questions if anybody's left here on Periscope, or we'll do some crash stories. I've been getting a ton of emails on the Phantom 3. I try to answer them the best I can. Again, I'm no professional at this. I'm just getting into it. So thanks for all the questions. I'm trying to help you guys out. I had one last night. A guy says, what should I get, an Inspire or a Phantom 3? And I'm like, I don't know. What do you want to do? I'm like, talking to Eric, I'm like, heck, buy the Phantom 3 and a ton of batteries. You'd be totally happy with that. If you're just, doing some, filming, nothing really professional. He's like, but I got the money for Inspire. Why not buy that? I'm like, well, okay, if you got the money, buy the Inspire, So we talked a little bit between Twitter, and I actually think he's going to end up buying the Phantom 3. So thanks, guys, for all the questions. But one thing I did want to mention, I got a lot of questions about using the HeadPlay goggles and the HDMI and everything. And at the time, and I just found this out, the HeadPlay goggles were the only ones I thought you could actually use with the HDMI and plug it into the – if you put the module on the Phantom 3 or if you're using the Inspire 1. But I just found out that the new Dominator V3s, I guess the new ones, the V3s, you can actually use an HDMI. So now you can use your Fat Sharks with the Phantom 3 or the Inspire. So just wanted to throw that out there if anybody was on the fence with that. My personal opinion, what I seen and everything, I like the view of the HeadPlay goggles though a little bit better than the Fat Shark type goggles, but that's just my opinion. So half the price. The only thing I do like a little bit about the Dominator 3 is if you're using it for other applications, it does have the built-in DVR recorder. So, yeah. If you're flying your FPV quad or whatever, you can record that, which is kind of nice.
I think you still have to buy the module with that one. It's either that or the Attitude. One of them you got to buy the receiver module.
Yes, it is with the Dominators because, depending on, which is kind of nice too, whether you fly 5.8 or 1.3 or 2.4 or whatever. Yeah, you can buy whatever module you want for that.
Yeah.
So I think that's about all I have as far as new products and things that are out there. So what do you guys want to do? You want a few crash stories? Do you want to take some questions on Periscope? Let's see. Get the computer back up here. I can read a few crash. Both. Somebody says both. One question is, so does the HeadPlay just give you a wider field of view? I don't know if it's actually wider, but it's, for me, it's more, what do I want to say, Andre? Like you feel immersed. It's actually like sitting in an IMAX theater. Like when you put the goggles on, you see this giant screen. So it feels like you're more in the view itself. Like you're actually sitting right in the cockpit and you have this big wide angle view. Very immersive. Yes, yes.
And like Wayne said, he wears glasses, and these have been the best goggles for a person who needs corrective lenses to use so far. you know, just from that point of view, the Fat Sharks and that, you can run those adapters, but hey, have you had any fogging issues with the head plate?
I haven't yet. Okay. I haven't really had them out on like a 95 degree day, you know, where the humidity is really high. And I haven't heard of any fogging issues with them, not to say that they won't. So we'll have to wait and see on that.
You might actually be better because your face is physically further away from the lens itself.
Correct. You know, right.
I've been running my Teleporter 3s and it's, you know, yeah, they're not that great as far as resolution, but they've been good enough so far that I've been able to, you know, run my FPV stuff with the quads and not really have any issues. And then the other day I was actually flying in the backyard with the little UMX Vapor. The FPV Vapor, doing FPV with that in my tiny yard and just giggling the entire time. So
yeah. Somebody on Periscope asked about the, you know, how they fit and feel, and they kind of look big. Now I agree. I'll be the first one to say when you first look at them and everything, you're like, oh, these things are hokey. But when you put them on, the fit and feel, they're very lightweight, very. And when you put them on and the strap goes all the way over your head, they fit so they're so comfortable, actually more comfortable that for me than like the Sky Zone goggles I was previously using or even the old version 1 Hobby King goggles. They're very comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I have no problems. And then the other question was somebody wanted to know what the best first goggles are. Again, for $250, my opinion is the head plate goggles, you can't beat them.
I've got them on my radar, but I haven't done enough FPV this year to really say I got to replace my teleporters. But it's funny because when I was flying the FPV Vapor, James comes running out and says, oh, I want your goggles. You can fly off the screen. I'm like, oh. And so I'm there flying off my Quantum V1, you know, ground station going, oh, this is not as fun. But yeah, we made it work. But I'm like, I'm actually going to have to get a second set of goggles eventually. So I think the head plates are on my radar, but I think they're all back. They're all out of stock right now.
Again. somebody wanted to know if we tried the Dominator with the fan plate. Now it's a good thing you brought that up because, I seen that new, did you see the fan plate that they have
I
for
did,
the Dominator?
Yeah. I did. Yeah.
That's a fantastic idea. It's changed all around. It looks like it's kind of like, more the head plate style where it's one big, instead of the eye cups, you know, right against each eye, you know, you have that foam feature in the fan plate that goes around kind of your more of your face part. So, really keeps the fogging down.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's compatible with, they said you could put them on any of the older Fat Shark goggles too. So that is a great, great design they come up with there.
I'll have to look into that one because if that's the case, then I might just go that way. But I really didn't have a lot of trouble this summer. I had it a few times, but I just found that one of the tips there, I think it was a flight test tip actually, is like, you know, I just wear the goggles down around my neck so the body temperature is still around.
Uh-huh.
And then when I popped them up, they were good to go, so...
Do you see a question? Do I have a ham radio license? No, I do not have a ham radio license. But I will say, and we talked about it too, Wayne does. Wayne does everything right by the book. So he went and took his test and has his license, and he's kind of like, Chris, I ought to just go do it. So maybe this winter I'll just get it done and I don't have to worry about it. So he said it was pretty easy. And I'm sure he could help me with it. So, no ham radio license yet. So, any other questions? If not, we'll do some crash stories. If I can find my email here, email. Let's see some crash stories here. Give me a second. So, you going out and doing any flying today or this weekend, Andre?
I'm hoping after the podcast, once the weather warms up and the lawn dries, because I've got the Waikira 250, Runner 250 review to do, and then I also want to get that HMB, the multi-RC HMB 235, I want to get that out in the field, you know, in open space and just open it up and see what it'll do. So I've got all my batteries and my FPV gear all ready to go. So, but the main goal today is to shoot the review of the Waikira Runner 250 because I want to get that one all submitted to for Flight Test.
Ah, nice.
You know, actually, and you know, while you're queuing up your stuff, yeah, it is a. If you're looking for a quad, yeah, my opinion on it basically is, if you're looking for a quad that requires no soldering and a little bit of assembly, depending on what kit you are, the one that was sent to me by GearBest Review was a DYI. Didn't even come with a remote, so I just slapped a 6-channel orange receiver on there, a DSMX, yeah, and wired that in, and so far it goes. And a little bit of tweaking in here and there, it's got a really high startup speed. Like when you, if you're setting your trim on your throttle too low, you run the risk of the motors not all starting up equally, which is then the thing flips over. So when you arm and the motors spool up, you're almost ready to take off. So that's one thing we noticed right away. Otherwise, it flies okay compared to something like my other quads. I would describe it as mushy.
Yeah.
But you know, it's something like, I'm gonna hook a body box in there, and I'll get my dad on it because he's never flown a quad, and I think it's suitable for that. I would never call it a racer, as they seem to imply it is, because I don't think it's overly quick, and with an integrated circuit board, and it's rather exposed and thin. And but if you're looking for something out of the box that's ready to go, and you know, just to go flying and do maybe even some light FPV, depending on what package you pick up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a half bad product. So I'm going to get out of the field. I'll set up my cameras, put the Mobius out, put the two other cameras on tripods and stationary positions, and we'll see what kind of footage I can get for this thing, and just package up the review.
Interesting. Yeah, I want to hear a little bit more about that. Somebody, the only bad thing with Periscope is these questions come up so quick and disappear so quick, and I'm trying to write some of them down. Wish there was a better way that they could do that. But anyway, somebody asked about Horizon Now is selling the, and I'm sure you've seen them, the Sony cameras, the action cams. Now, which is kind of in direct competition with the GoPros. But I will say, and this could be a thing down the road that could be really cool for whether the airplanes or maybe even throwing one on a quad, is I don't know if you've seen it, but Sony has got it's called a 360 fly camera out. And the only reason I know this is a couple of the motocross racers are sponsored by Sony and already have this camera out, and I've seen some video footage of it. Now, the video footage isn't perfect yet. I think they're still a little bit in the development stage of getting it to where it really looks good. But with the 360 camera, it actually films 360 degrees. And then when you're watching the film, you can just scroll the camera, like if it's showing a shot of the motorcycle and it's on the the front fender, and you want to see on the side, you just rotate it right there as you're watching it, and you see from the side, and then you can rotate it from the back. So obviously Sony, they're a huge company and they know what they're doing. So I think down the road when this type of camera, you know, they get it right, the quality a little bit better and the distortion a little bit better and a smaller size, to be able to put that on, say, an FPV airplane and go fly FPV with a 360-degree camera is going to be phenomenal.
Very neat. Very neat footage. Imagine that, on the belly of the Radian or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Just phenomenal, you know?
Yeah.
And then you get rid of the pan and tilt and the extra servos and the extra weight, and you got one camera that's going to do the whole thing.
You're doing a digital as you move around, it's just deciding what field or what section of the view to look at. So,
yeah. Pretty cool.
Over the future.
Yes. All right. Hey, we're almost been an hour and a half. I'll tell you what, I'll read at least a couple crash stories. There's a couple funny ones, and then we'll get out of here and I'll let you go enjoy your day a little bit.
You too, man. You got to get flying.
Yeah, I know. Baseball is finally done. Hopefully I'd love to get out and do a little flying. So, and I'm hoping here real soon, Wayne's about moved in. We'll go down and cut in his runway. And
you guys are lucky.
All right. This is from, I'm terrible at names, Kike, Kecai. And he's actually from England. He said, I've always been a big fan. This literally just – now, this email is a little bit older. This was from, I think, back in July. This is how backed up I am here a little bit. The thing about crash stories, too, before I get in it, I love the crash stories. But my personal opinion, I think everybody would agree with you, it's so much better if we have a full studio, and I'm working to get more people in here, you know, to have a full studio to read the crash stories, because the listen, to see the reactions and to listen to the reactions and the comment on the crash stories, I just think it works out better. So we'll just read a few now, and we get back everybody, a bunch of guys back in the studio, we'll read more because I think it just makes it more entertaining. So I'll just read a couple really good ones here. Okay, literally this just happened about an hour ago. I got a Yak 55 EPP from Hobby King. I took it out with my three-year-old and fly in the football field nearby. Normally I would fly with my back facing the residential building so the plane is always flying away from them. Today I had to do the other way, opposite way, so my son can play away from the road. Just 2 minutes into the first pack, I was doing a couple of rolls and a dive, and suddenly a loud bang. My plane just disappeared behind a building, or so I thought. I quickly grabbed my son and went around to check, thinking how much damage it might have caused to someone's garden. After 10 minutes searching, I had no luck, and someone said, "Look, what's that thing up on the roof?" As life would always have it, the person turns out to be the person who has always warned me about flight safety and always liked to keep an eye on me whenever I show up with a large plane. I was terrified to tell him what happened. I got myself together and walked to the back of the house to assess the situation. It looked like the landing gears were bent, motor mount is a bit squint, and it was still attached to the body. Propeller seems okay. No ailerons, they didn't work. The elevator is still working, but the most important thing, the plane is upright. Eureka, maybe I can just fly this thing off his roof.
Oh, dear.
So to do that, I must return to the field where I can see the plane, and this is when my ever-watchful neighbor waved to me out his kitchen window. With my transmitter in hand, I pretended to be flying something in the distance. Just when he turned away, I hit full throttle and full elevator. Miracle happened. My Yak took off vertically from his roof, and it was in the air again. With no ailerons, it turned upside down very quickly and was able to land with just the elevator and the rudder a few seconds later. Damage report. Motor mount always completely came off. It didn't come completely off. It was hanging on there with half an inch of EPP and plywood. Lost a chunk of the foam at the bottom. Landing gear is bent back, but easily fixable. I was very lucky to get away. And the moral of the story, don't bring your three-year-old to the flying field.
Because it was his three-year-old's fault.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh, that's funny. What are the odds of that, though? You know, you always have usually that one. I got one neighbor in my neighborhood, too. He's not too fond of the airplanes, and he's never really said anything, you know. But let's see. Let's do one more. I had a few in here. Let's try. That's a long one. Ooh. What's this one? I still got a bunch here that people sent in from Flight Fest, actually. Mm. I think this might be actually one. Okay, this one's pretty good. This one's from Christopher Bach, who was at Flight Fest. Great running into you guys at Flight Fest. Really appreciate what you guys do and take a few minutes to talk to my dad and I. I mentioned to you that I had just flown my FT Mini Scout that afternoon on a long hiatus from the RC hobby. I had started learning to fly as a teenager in the late 80s. I had to hang it up when I went off to college. So recently my dad and I are trying to get back into it. We've been practicing on the simulator for a while and been getting the itch off the computer into the real world. Scout seemed like a good, simple airframe to start with and a better place for that new again pilot to get back in the air at Flight Fest, so I thought I would share my crash story. Dad and I made our way along the flight line searching for the beginner area. We were hoping that there might be a volunteer or two assisting newbies to get their planes in the air, but it looked like everyone was on their own. So I ducked under the tape into the pilot area and did some quick checks of the plane. Transmitter on, throttle cut off, battery plugged in. I moved the sticks, rev the motor, and everything looked good. A quick glance back to my dad for the final okay, and we were ready to roll. I raised the throttle, prop word to life, and felt like the plane tugging eagerly from my hand. A quick toss, and suddenly the plane was airborne. Soon it would be out over the bean field, banking and dipping. Wait, hold on a second. It seemed a little frisky for a scout, and it had another idea. The moment I let go, the plane shot up into the air, and before I could reach the stick, It flipped over onto its back and began a steep plunge toward the spectator line behind me. I hope that I had the sense to chop the throttle, but it didn't. It happened so fast that I can't be sure I even shut the throttle down. I heard someone call out, "Heads up!" Half a second later, the plane barreled into the ground with a thud only a couple feet away from another pilot. That's always your worst fear, too, is crashing into it like somebody else or another pilot. I was beside myself, wide-eyed and dumbfounded with remorse, mortified that I'd come so close to planting my plane into another human being. The Scout is not a large plane, but even for a small one, it could do a lot of damage. I readied myself for the well-deserved scolding and half expected to hear a breakdown of the safety rules, or at least, hey, watch it. But as he stood back up in the crouched position, before I could formulate any kind of apology, the pilot helpfully offered his advice. "Hey, man, that's a sign that you're probably tail-heavy. My Scout was the same way. I had to put a bigger battery in mine." Another gentleman nearby was equally encouraging and helpful. "Yeah, you might need a little bit more down trim too. Just make a few adjustments and give it another try." It is a true testimony in the spirit of the flight test community that everyone is looking out to reach out to each other and willing to help one another to be successful in the hobby. That attitude can turn the otherwise discouraging event into a solvable problem. What a better place indeed, the Flight Fest and a new pilot to get into the air. If all those guys listen to the podcast, I want to sincerely thank them for their help. And dude, I'm really sorry I almost killed you. Despite the violence of the impact, the plane suffered little more than just a broken prop. With a new one and a quarter and a small rock, and he has a picture of, literally has a rock like from a driveway on a quarter taped to the nose of his airplane. Nice. With a small rock taped onto the nose for balance, see attached photo. The next flights went exactly without incident. The plane banked and dipped playfully over the bean field, and even the landings were okay, even if they weren't beautiful, but I got it down in one piece. Thanks for the great discussions on the podcast. Chris Bach from Columbus, Ohio.
You know what? That plane is phenomenal. My dad was really struggling, especially with the size of, if he couldn't make it out of the field, he tried flying some of his larger planes at the field near his place, which is a smaller soccer field. And I shot the plans to him one day and said, "Here, build this one." Uh-huh. And he loves that thing to death now. He's done the aileron mod to it.
Oh, yeah?
And that transformed the plane. To put in the aileron control into it versus just the rudder and elevator.
Uh-huh.
I flew it a couple of weeks ago and just was having – I've got one sitting on my wall that I never completed.
Huh.
And it is just a great little, you know, 2S500, and it will just putz around for 5-6 minutes in some pretty good wind. And that plane really helped him out because he was trying things like the blender, the baby blender, and it was just a little too fast, yeah. A little too unpredictable.
Right.
And this one, he can just beam around, and it's the right size for a smaller field.
Right, right. Huh, good. That's awesome. Well, what do you think, Andre? We've been in here an hour and a half, and I know it's Saturday, and you probably want to get out and go flying. So
eventually, but you know what? I got one more hat tip to do.
Sure, absolutely.
Good buddy, Wilson man, Joshua Archer.
Yeah.
Flew his finished Sikorsky S-39. Did you see the paint scheme he put on that thing?
Yes, I did.
He did a red and yellow shell, and I watched the video. They didn't get the takeoff, but they got the flyby and land. That thing looks like a beautiful, smooth, it was docile. It just cruised along, you know?
Uh-huh.
And he did some really nice close flybys to the camera guy, and I was so impressed on just watching that thing and the build. I mean, we watched him every night, you know? I mean, the guy was doing, 18-hour days just trying to get the thing built and flown. I was a little upset that we took off before he was ready to go, but I had my 9-hour run home.
Yes.
He's, you know, wow, what a plane. And so if you're looking for this thing, it is under the builders, the Mad Scratch Builders, under the form, and the title is FF 2015 Sikorsky S-39. Check it out.
I'll check that out.
He built that thing. We watched him build it up all foam cut and balsa and just sheet it and he full on admits he won't do something as ambitious next year because it was so time consuming that he didn't get to experience all, you know, get the talk to everybody. But to see it in its final product, you go into the last page here to look at the graphics or whatever. I think it's on page, where were they?
Yeah, he... even I have to watch a video of it flying, but when he got it all painted and all the detail done and everything, was posting the pictures on Facebook and, you know, tagged me in it, and to see, just see that part, because I seen it ready to fly, no paint, still pink foam and all that, and to see that, the difference is unbelievable. He did a just phenomenal job, so I got to check out the video of that
it
thing.
It is beautiful. I almost wonder, I'm hoping he'll try it on water, because it looks so good that I bet it would just skim along the water really nicely. But either way, a gorgeous, gorgeous final product.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, too, we might as well throw out, I thought it was kind of funny, and a neat little idea is, again, with, I believe it was Joshua, had the older Durafly P-51 and was trying to sell it, and you got wind of it. And it was just kind of funny that, you were trying to use the flight test community to see if somehow you could get that plane from Joshua's house to your house without any kind of shipping costs. And I think you tried working it out there for probably, what, at least a week and a half or so?
Yeah.
But ended up just shipping it direct up to you, so.
Yeah, it's en route. So Frankie's coming north.
Good.
It was one of those things where, I've been reading up on it. It's a pretty decent airplane.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, he hasn't done a lot of flights with it or anything. So I'm just going to clean it up and put her together. And it's going to be, I think I'm going to get a little bit of mileage out of it this winter, or at least late into the fall. And hey, I love a good used airplane because the stress is gone.
Right.
So, it doesn't owe me anything. I'll paint up the tail, because he was going to try and repaint it. So he'd stripped all the paint off the elevator. So I'll probably just put a yellow tail on the whole back end of it just to cover it up.
Yeah.
And otherwise, it's whole, ready to go.
Yeah. Hey, you ought to take that thing this winter, man. Do some weathering stuff to it. Make it weather that sucker out.
Yeah, and just have some good time with it.
Yeah.
Part of me was considering turning into a belly lander, but I think this might be a really good plane for me just to get my retract landings up to snuff, because it's probably going to be a little lighter and a little bit easier to bring in than, say, the FW-190.
Probably, yeah. I will tell you, though, I do have some experience with that plane. It is not the easiest, warbird to land. You got to be a little bit on your toes with that. But if you have that one dialed down, I guarantee the P-40 won't have any problems with it.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it, and I'm kind of, it cost a little. Actually, no, it was a really good deal, and even shipping and everything. So it still cost me maybe a third of what it would cost to buy something new. So
right.
I'm like, okay, great, let's go. And we tried to work out a way to ship it, and in the end, I said, no, just do it. But he had the box, he had the original box, which really helped out.
Good, good. All right, well, what do you say we get out of here and go enjoy the rest of the day?
It's funny. I'm getting messages off Facebook going, when are you posting the podcast? I'm like, well, we're live right now, so you got to wait.
Speaking of which, I'll throw out too real quick. I'll try to get it edited, and I'll try to get the podcast out real quick. But just so I don't get more messages and emails, probably I'll try either tonight or tomorrow. I'll get everything posted on the Flight Test website podcast. So the podcast will be out on like iTunes and Stitcher and wherever else it gets sent out to for that. And then on the Flight Test website, it'll probably be up on, I'm probably going to say Sunday morning. I'll try to get some pictures, and it takes me a little while to get that stuff gathered up and get it edited and get the article up on the website, but I'll get it up there. So if you don't see it right away and people are already talking or listening to the podcast, don't freak out. I'll get it up there, I promise. Other than, thanks for listening. Again, this was kind of like the Periscope test. We did have one that worked out before, and I think it only went an hour and it shut down, but looking at it now, it's still going. I don't know. So maybe they changed things around, and I don't know. So, we're an hour and 40 minutes in, Periscope still going. If you like it, we'll keep doing it. We get a bunch of people in the studio. I think it'll be more fun than just sitting, watching me staring here by myself in the, as you can see, the million-dollar studio here.
Finley. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike, what's going on? That's my Whippet buddy there who put the smackdown on me. Pretty bad, but...
I think if we have a few more bodies between, the four of us,
sure,
a little more interaction
absolutely
on Periscope because, you know, we can zone out for 30 seconds and chat back and forth.
Yeah, good morning, exactly. Mike. But it was kind of a test today. So if you like it, we got it figured out. We'll keep doing it a little bit more and we'll go from there. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Andre, thanks again for coming in Saturday morning. I know I've been rough on everybody trying to get everybody organized and in the studio, but I promise we'll get more people in here soon. And other than that, I think that's it, and we'll get out of here.
Excellent. Everybody have a fantastic weekend. To my Canadian friends, happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy that turkey tomorrow.
I will. Thank you.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you here in a couple weeks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us.
Ciao.
Thank you. Talk to you later.